Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is September 25th, 2019, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Pre-Hospital Nitroglycerin for Acute Stroke Patients. And our guest skeptic is Clay Odell. He is a paramedic RN for the New London Hospital EMS in New Hampshire. That's in the USA, which provides 911 coverage and mobile integrated healthcare for 7 rural communities. He's been involved in EMS for over 30 years in a variety of roles and is a strong advocate for evidence-based EMS protocols. Welcome back to the SGM, Clay.
Thanks for having me, Ken. It's great to be back.
Well, I'm trying to think, when was the last time you were here? Because it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I think it was back in 2015, and we talked about remote ischemic conditioning in the pre-hospital field.
Oh, you are correct. And I don't even have to go back and look at my notes. I bet you I was skeptical about it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, actually, in preparing for this episode, I, of course, went to clinicaltrials.gov and found out that there was a study going on called the Condi 2 ERIC PPCI trial, and it's been published just this year, and it had 5,400 plus patients randomized into remote ischemic conditioning or control. Do you want me to tell you what the results were?
Oh, please, please. Can't wait.
Remote ischemic conditioning did not demonstrate superior clinical outcomes. And the clinical outcomes they were interested in was cardiac death, so mortality, or hospitalization due to heart failure at 1 year in patients with STEMIs undergoing primary PCI. Now, to be fair, this was not in the pre-hospital setting, but they did do this large study showing remote ischemic conditioning did not confer a patient-oriented benefit. So, my skepticism is still working.
Yeah, it's kind of too bad. I would have liked to have seen that play out, but I guess we won't wear out as many blood pressure cuffs as we might have otherwise.
Yeah, no, it's nice to finally get some definitive data, because until then, it's an open question. You can't say it doesn't work, but you certainly can't support the claim that it does work until you have reasonable evidence to support the claim. But let's get on to this case that you got for today.
Sure. So your ambulance response to a 911 call for a 75-year-old male experiencing abrupt onset of left-sided weakness. You arrive to find the patient awake and alert with a facial droop, slurred speech, and left-sided arm drift. He has a fast ED score of 3. He has a history of hypertension. His vital signs are a heart rate of 90 beats per minute. Blood pressure is 162 over 96 millimeters of mercury. His respiratory rate is 14 breaths per minute. His SpO2 is 96% on room air. We did a capillary blood glucose of 120 milligrams per deciliter, also known as 6.7 millimoles per liter. His 12-lead ECG shows a normal sinus rhythm without ST abnormality or ectopy. While preparing for transport, you contemplate administering nitroglycerin due to the likelihood of stroke.
Well, before we get into the background material, Clay, I want to compliment you on giving the glucose level in two different ways. You gave it American and the way the rest of the world uses it, I understand. So thanks for that.
Well, it's only fair, and it's just looking it up on Google.
Well, we've covered stroke many times on the SGM, and this episode will not debate the use of TPA for acute ischemic stroke. Rather, we will be discussing whether lowering the blood pressure of a patient suspected of having a stroke in the pre-hospital setting will have a net beneficial patient-oriented outcome, or a POO.
Right. And we know that hypertension is certainly common in acute stroke and has been found to be a predictor of poor outcome. Having said that, whether or not it's beneficial to lower the blood pressure in these cases is controversial.
Previous studies have suggested that nitric oxide, or NO, donors, such as transdermal glycerol trinitrates, or GTN, also known as nitroglycerin for the rest of this podcast, reduces blood pressure, improves cerebral blood flow, and reduces stroke lesion size if administered early.
Yeah, there have been 5 randomized trials looking at nitroglycerin, with 4 not showing superiority for functional outcome. One phase 2 trial done in the pre-hospital setting, which was called RITE, which stood for Rapid Intervention with Glycerol Trinitrate in Hypertensive Stroke Trial, did suggest a benefit to nitroglycerin.
The RITE study was a subgroup analysis of the ENOS study. That's the efficacy of nitric oxide in stroke. That looked at nitroglycerin within 6 hours of stroke. It too failed to demonstrate a statistical benefit.
However, a systematic review, meta-analysis of individual patient data in these five trials suggested that earlier administration of nitroglycerin was associated with better outcomes in both ischemic and intracerebral hemorrhage stroke. It was also associated with lower mortality, disability, cognitive impairment, mood disturbance, and poor quality of life.
The conclusion of the Wright study was that a larger trial is needed to determine if nitroglycerin improves survival with good neurologic outcomes. So what's the clinical question?
So the clinical question is, does early administration of nitroglycerin by paramedics in the pre-hospital setting improve neurological outcomes in patients with presumed acute stroke?
And the reference?
So the article was authored by the Wright II investigators, Bath et al., in 2019, titled Prehospital Transdermal Glycerol Trinitrate in Patients with Ultra-Acute Presumed Stroke, Wright II, an ambulance-based, randomized, sham-controlled, blinded Phase 3 trial. It was in The Lancet in March of 2019.
Wow, they almost gave you the entire methodology there, didn't they? With it was a pre-hospital setting, they randomized, it had a sham, it was blinded. Yeah.
Yeah, it started off with a nice pithy title, but then they kind of extended it.
All right, let's go through the PICO. What was the population?
Sure, the population was adult patients who called emergency services for presumed stroke within 4 hours of onset of symptoms and a FAST score of 2 or 3, systolic blood pressure of equal or greater than 120 millimeters of mercury.
And they excluded patients that came from the nursing home, had a Glasgow coma scale of less than 8, were hypoglycemic or had a witness seizure, life expectancy expected to be less than 6 months, known to have taken a PDE5 inhibitor in the previous 5 days, or to be sensitive to the transdermal nitro patch or duoderm hydrocolloid dressing. What was the intervention?
So the intervention was application of a 5.0 milligram transdermal nitro patch.
And what did they compare it to?
Application of a sham duoderm hydrocolloid dressing.
All right. And the primary outcome?
Primary outcome was functional outcome measured by modified Rankin scale at 90 days.
And the secondary outcomes?
Secondary outcomes were Barthel index, cognition, quality of life, and mood.
And they had some safety outcomes.
Sure. All-cause mortality, cause-specific mortality, hypotension or hypertension occurring during the first 4 days.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, pre-hospital treatment with transdermal GTN does not seem to improve functional outcome in patients with presumed stroke. It is feasible for UK paramedics to obtain consent and treat patients with stroke in the ultra-acute pre-hospital setting. End of quote. All right, Clay, I know it's been a while, but we've got 11 quality checklists for randomized clinical trials. You ready to go through this?
Absolutely.
All right, are these emergency department patients?
No, Ken, the study looked at patients being treated in the pre-hospital setting by paramedics.
Were the patients adequately randomized?
Yes, they were.
Was the randomization process concealed?
Unsure. Ambulance stations were randomized with blocks of 4 packs, 2 active and 2 control. Paramedics got an envelope at the beginning of their shift and returned unopened ones at the end of their shift.
The fourth question is patients. Were they analyzed into the groups which they were randomized?
Yes, they were.
The study patients were recruited consecutively.
We're unsure about that.
The patients in both groups were similar with regards to prognostic factors.
Yes, they were.
Were all participants unaware of group allocation?
No, the clinicians, meaning the paramedics, the nurses, the physicians, were not blinded because the nitroglycerin patch and the sham patch were different. The patients and the outcome assessors were blinded.
The eighth question, were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
Was follow-up complete?
It was, at 96%.
All patient-important outcomes were considered.
Yes, they were.
And the final question, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, we believe it was not.
All right, let's run through the key results. They enrolled just over 1,100 patients into the Wright II study. The median time to randomization was just over an hour at 71 minutes. The cohort had slightly more men, and the mean age was in the early 70s. Ischemic strokes were diagnosed in 52%, so just over half the patients were ultimately found to have ischemic strokes. Intracerebral hemorrhages was 13%, TIAs 9, And here's an important stat. Stroke mimics, a quarter of the patients, 26%, were ultimately considered to be a stroke mimic.
So the mean change in blood pressure after the initial treatment was 5.8 millimeters of mercury systolic and 2.6 millimeters of mercury diastolic compared to the sham group.
So they did have a disease-oriented outcome, a DO, with the blood pressure drop. But what about their primary outcome? What about the POO?
No statistical difference in functional outcome.
Yeah, the functional outcome was measured by the modified Rankin scale at 90 days, and the odds ratio was 1.04 with that 95% confidence interval spanning 1 or no difference. How about the secondary outcomes?
So there were no statistically significant difference between the groups.
And the safety outcomes?
There was no statistical difference between the two groups. Example, mortality or serious adverse events. The nitroglycerin group did have more hypotension at day 4.
All right, Clay, you know what time it is?
No, what time is it?
It's time to talk nerdy. And how many points will we have?
I suspect 5.
My favorite number. Okay, so the first point is on me, and that's about enrollment and randomization. We are unsure if consecutive patients were randomized due to the possible lack of concealment. Ambulance stations were randomized, like you said, with blocks of 4 packs, 2 active and 2 control. Paramedics got an envelope at the beginning of their shift and returned unopened envelopes at the end of their shift. They did not mention if the envelopes were opaque. And even if the envelopes were opaque, there is recent evidence of paramedics opening trial envelopes until they found the intervention group. So it is possible that paramedics could have known which treatment group they had at the start of their shift and returned it unopened.
Ouch. That stabs me in the heart.
Yeah, no, I know that's pretty harsh.
Yeah, we don't have proof, however, that that happened in this particular instance.
Oh, absolutely not. And I'm certainly not wanting to focus just on paramedics. It's just this was a paramedic trial. There are other cases where healthcare providers, clinicians, physicians, nurses, research assistants have gamed the system. And, you know, having a sealed envelope, it's a level of concealment and moving to an opaque envelope. But sometimes the intervention package might be different, like thicker because it's got extra material in it. So there have been instances where people have gamed the system before. And again, I'm not saying that happened in this case. I'm just saying there is a better way to do this. There is a randomized generator with a central line, with a computer-based system that could have been used to try to prevent this type of criticism from coming up.
So the second point is blinding. Now, this trial was not completely blinded. Paramedics and treating clinicians knew which groups were assigned. The patients and the outcome assessors were unaware of the group allocation. However, there is no confirmation in the study that blinding was maintained. And unmeasured factors in the management of the patient could also be possible. In addition, if the patient knew which group they were assigned and the study hypothesis, that could have introduced bias favoring the intervention. It would have been easy to ask the participants at the end of the study which group they thought they were assigned.
I'm surprised how many times I don't see this in a study, especially when it's only single-blinded. If it's double-blinded, maybe it's not as important, but if you've got a single-blinded study, you could have it unblinded consciously or unconsciously. So it's nice if they just ask at the end of the study, so, do you think you were in the intervention group? Do you think you were in the placebo group or the sham group or the control group? And see if that number is higher or lower than what would be expected on chance alone. All right, the third point is about outcome assessment. The primary outcome was the modified Rankin scale. The reliability of the modified Rankin scale is only moderate in trained clinicians, and its validity has been questioned. This trial outcome assessment was done by telephone with trained blinded assessors. If the patient could not be reached by phone, though, a questionnaire was mailed to the patient for them to complete. Now, no information can be found in the manuscript of how many patients had to fill out the questionnaire themselves and how many patients were interviewed over the phone. But this does raise the question about how valid and precise the outcome assessment was.
So the next point involves the intervention. The study design was for 4 placements of the active or sham patch over 4 days. However, there was significant fall off following the initial treatment. While there was 99% adherence to protocol by paramedics, only 55% of the subjects received a second treatment in the hospital, and less than 50% got all four intended treatments. Now, even the fall in blood pressure for the 99% who received the first treatment was lower than prior studies. I'm somewhat curious whether a larger dose of nitroglycerin would have dropped the blood pressure more, and if better adherence to treatment protocols down the line had been followed, perhaps a benefit could be demonstrated.
Yeah, that's a reasonable hypothesis, saying maybe we just didn't treat them long enough, the dose wasn't great enough. But again, the burden of proof would be on those making that claim. So, hypothesis generating, go out and test it. But until then, we can't say that the intervention demonstrated superiority. The fifth and final point was about intention to treat and modified intention to treat. They divided the study up into two cohorts. Cohort number two included all the patients, and this represents a true intention to treat analysis. The primary outcome was no statistical difference. Now, for cohort number one, they removed all the patients with TIAs, and remember that was 9%, or stroke mimics, 26%, for a total of 35% of the patients. The remaining 65%, or two-thirds of the patients, were analyzed as a form of a modified intention to treat analysis of the targeted disease, and in this case, ischemic or hemorrhagic stroke. Even this modified intention to treat analysis failed to demonstrate superiority of nitroglycerin. All right, that's enough for the nerdiness. It's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Can we agree with the author's conclusions about lack of efficacy, but are not sure why they needed to include the statement about feasibility of paramedics participating in an RCT?
Yeah, why did you think that they put that in there? Do you think it was because it was a neutral study? Like, in other words, I don't like saying negative, but that it didn't demonstrate superiority, so they wanted to, you know, have something positive in their conclusion, saying, well, this showed that UK paramedics in the pre-hospital setting can recruit patients and perform these types of studies in the pre-hospital setting?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, some of their earlier studies did kind of look at the same issue, whether, in fact, you could effectively have an RCT completely using paramedics. So that may be part of what they've been trying to accomplish along the way as well. I don't know.
Paramedics are highly trained, highly intelligent individuals. I don't even know why that would be an open question, but okay. How about an SGEM bottom line?
So, very early application of transdermal nitroglycerin by paramedics in the pre-hospital setting cannot be recommended at this time in patients with a suspected stroke.
And how about a case resolution?
So, an intravenous line is established in the patient's right forearm, and he's transported to the closest hospital with stroke care capability.
So, for the clinical application, this is just another example of pre-hospital treatment not resulting in a patient-oriented outcome. We've had other examples on the SGEM, such as IV fluids and IV antibiotics in septic patients, and therapeutic hypothermia, endotracheal intubation, and epinephrine for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. We really need to focus on things that have proven to make a difference in the pre-hospital setting by paramedics, like high-quality CPR and early defibrillation.
So, Kenya, I've been doing some reading lately about medical reversals, which are medical things that we think are going to work that ultimately prove to not work, and the same is the case in the pre-hospital field. So, certainly, evidence-based protocols need to be evidence-based. So, if something's not going to work, we should not be doing them and stick to the stuff that does make sense.
I agree. And there's lots of things that we do in clinical medicine that ultimately prove not to work. And like you mentioned, reversals do take place. So when I'm practicing in the emergency department, I'm trying to focus in on those, you know, high yield things that have been demonstrated to have benefit and things that have proven not to have benefit. Then I try not to do those things. So I think it spans from the pre-hospital setting into the emergency department and throughout medicine.
It's really hard for a paramedic to consider, don't just do something, stand there. But sometimes that is exactly what you need to do.
And that was my favorite paper from 2018, don't just do something, stand there. All right, so what are you going to tell your patient?
So I'm going to tell my patient, it looks like he might be having a stroke. We're going to monitor you closely. We're going to transport you to the hospital emergency department where they're going to assess you and treat whatever is causing your weakness.
It's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Eliyahu Simcha Rosenberg, an EMT from Israel. He knew Gene Glass is credited with coining the term meta-analysis and published one of the first systematic reviews and meta-analyses in 1979 on the inverse relationship between class size and pupil academic achievement. What's the Keener question this week?
So the question this week is, who is the person that invented nitroglycerin?
So if you know the answer of the person who invented nitroglycerin, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Clay, for coming on and doing another SGEM episode with me.
Well, thank you for inviting me back, Ken. I have to say I'm really glad there's increasing emphasis on quality research in the pre-hospital environment. And I really want to recognize you for your considerable work helping EMS providers to step up to the plate and be effective users of the research.
Oh, well, you know, it's a team sport, and I love working with paramedics. You guys are a bunch of highly skilled, highly intelligent clinicians who really care, right? Who really care. And so I love it. And it takes a team all working together in the same direction for the best care to be delivered to patients based on the best evidence. I hope we don't have to wait 4 more years for you to show up on the SGEM again.
Me neither.
Well, if you find a paper, fire me off an email and we'll take a look and see if we can get you back on the SGEM sooner. But until then, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Sure. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.